Detektor FM. Zurück zum Thema.
Ich spreche jetzt hier auf der Bühne mit dem amerikanischen Schriftsteller Stuart Onan. Er hat mit Henry persönlich oder Henry himself im Original einen Kosmos wieder eröffnet, den er vor ein paar Jahren schon mal aufgemacht hat, und zwar mit Emily Allein. Das Buch war sehr erfolgreich, und da das Gespräch auch einigermaßen erfolgreich werden soll, muss ich jetzt leider ins Englische switchen. Ich hoffe, das ist okay für die Zuhörer. Welcome, Stuart Onan.
Thank you.
The averageness of an elderly couple, or maybe mostly happy times because nothing overly dramatic is happening. Is that a good summary of your novel?
Yes, I'd say everyday life.
Everyday life. Your protagonist, Henry, is a retired engineer. He's worked as a flight engineer. No, you've worked as a flight engineer, sorry.
Yes.
Before you took up a career in writing. Without jumping to any conclusions, do you consider the way Henry looks at and leads his life desirable after being an engineer?
Unavoidable, maybe. Seeing the world in very concrete terms and what can and cannot be fixed. He tries to fix and make better everything, but of course he can't fix everything.
Like a kitchen drawer that he over and over tries to fix.
Or the gutters, or the lawn, or anything in Chautauqua.
So you would say that engineering has taught you something about writing too?
A little bit, yeah. I learned writing the way an engineer would, which is learning the components and seeing how they work, seeing how the different components fit together, what different effects can be done with different form, different structure, different language.
Do you sometimes miss working as an engineer and not having to write?
Of course, yeah. I was in aerospace. So anytime, right now they're doing a spacewalk right now up in space, and I was fascinated with space as a child and flight and airplanes. So yeah, I do miss it.
But now you focus more on the inner spaces of your protagonists.
And also the different places in the world that the books take place. I mean, they take place all over. Mm-hmm. Jerusalem, Vietnam, Cuba, everywhere. Mm-hmm. In this case, it's very close to home. It's very domestic. Mm-hmm. But some of my other work is very far-flung and strange and exotic.
Now that you mention your other work, I can pose this question a little earlier. Your books regularly get very favorable reviews. Be it the great inner drama or the thrillers, mysteries, what some would consider genre fiction. Could you tell any story?
No, definitely not. Definitely not. Scott Fitzgerald said to write about a character, he has to find an emotion in that character that he can understand deeply. And I think that's true of my characters as well. I mean, I have to truly understand them. So I can't write anybody's story or a story that takes place anywhere.
Is there a similarity to the characters that you could understand and that you could relate to?
Oh, I think so. I think the books are very different. I mean, the book about Fitzgerald in Hollywood seems very different than the book about the revolutionary in Jerusalem after the Second World War. And yet the characters are very much the same. They're men that have lost everything and have to learn how to live again and become the person that they thought they were.
You've written Emily Alone, well, I don't know, almost a decade ago, about
yes.
8-9 years ago.
Yeah.
There she is, a widow. She's living alone with her dog, if I'm informed correctly.
Yes.
Yeah. And why did you keep her in mind so long? I mean, you've reopened that cosmos and written a prequel, so to speak. What made you think about her all the time?
I'm not sure, but she's one of those characters that never goes away, that is always with me. And even 8 years after I wrote Wish You Were Here, I began to think, well, what's she doing? Mm-hmm. You know, she seems very much like a person to me. And so after having written Emily Alone, I began to think about Henry and how he's absent from the first two books. He's like a ghost or a shadow. And everyone has their version of Henry, but we've never heard Henry's own version of events. And so I just started thinking, who is this man? And when I began to think about that, I began to think about his past and his parents and all the experiences that he went through. And then I began to just sit down and write about him and go deeper and deeper into him.
Hmm. When did you decide to make another book about Henry himself?
I want to say maybe in 20, 2016, I just began taking notes about him and thinking about him all the time. And I came up with the very first line of the book, which is, his mother named him Henry after her older brother, a chaplain killed in the Great War, as if he might take his place.
And meaning so, the First World War.
Yes, the First World War, yes. And so her brother Henry turns into her son Henry, and so the expectation there is for him to be a devout man, a soldier, a father, a husband. And so the track is set for his life, and he has to become these things. And now that his life is almost over, he looks back and says, well, was I good enough?
You describe, to me, it strikes me, and I can, of course, only argue from my rather European kind of view, that you describe a generation whose quote-unquote life reality and life stories don't seem to get too much attention on the media. I don't know how that is in the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, he's a bit invisible. And I think that's the job of the artist, is to make the invisible visible. To look at people that other people wouldn't see at all. And I think our older generation, both the men and the women, are rather invisible in America. Even though they're everywhere, no one pays them very much attention. So when I wrote Emily, I knew I was taking on something that other people really weren't writing about.
So it was important to you to talk about that generation?
That generation, but also a lot of the other characters that I've written about, you know, over my whole career are... There are millions of these people in America, but nobody pays them attention because they're not exciting, they're not sexy, they're not people that you'd make TV shows about or movies about. They're just ordinary people.
Would you consider Henry a happy man?
I would say he's somewhat satisfied with his life. But there are always those disappointments and those indelible regrets that come up in his life. And certainly the war is one of those things. The war, the Second World War, which he fought in, he can't quite get rid of it. He's stuck with it. It haunts him in a way.
Or the relationship to Sloan, maybe?
To Sloan, yes, yes. These paths not taken, these intense moments in his life that are gone now but never quite go away. Mm-hmm.
Now, let's talk about your German translation a little bit, because, I mean, obviously you're an American author, but you've been gathering a followership or readership here in Europe, too. And with a few exceptions, all your books have been translated to German by Thomas, was it?
Gunkel.
Gunkel.
Gunkel, yes.
You've written quite a few books, I have to add. Do you have a personal relationship to Thomas, and would you elaborate on that a little?
Well, he's been working on my work since 1994, so it's 25 years I've been working with him. And of all the translators in all the different languages, he's the one that is always emailing me. On Friday, I know I'm going to get a whole list of questions from Thomas, because I'm always writing about American subcultures, and sometimes some very specific, very small subcultures, which are very difficult to write about for a European audience. Say, writing about American baseball, or muscle cars, or the culture of meth, the drug culture in America. Yeah. So he has to do a lot of work. And it's amazing, because as a writer, you're always searching for the exact right word. And now he has to search for that exact right word in a much more difficult language. Because, I mean, the sounds, the poetry of German is so much different from the poetry of English. Mm.
You just mentioned that you get a lot of questions. Does that help you in any way? Does that give you feedback about your own research for your books?
That makes me understand that I'm writing in a certain kind of shorthand, especially for an American audience. I'm writing for an American audience that is going to fully understand even the most obscure, tiny thing. And I ask that American audience to make that leap of understanding. And I can't always ask the European audience to make that same leap.
And it kind of affects your writing, too.
A little bit, but more so it just means that Thomas has to work harder.
Okay. Das sagt Stuart Onan. Sein neuestes Buch heißt Henry persönlich oder im Original Henry himself. Es ist erschienen im Deutschen bei Rowohlt und kostet 24 Euro. Thank you very much for being here, Stuart Onan.
Thank you, and thank you all for coming.
Detektor FM wird 10.
10 Jahre Online-Radio, 10 Jahre Podcasts. Das feiern wir natürlich. Wir danken all unseren Hörerinnen und Hörern und kommen deshalb mit einer Podcast-Live-Tour auch in eure Nähe. Wir reisen vom 11. bis zum 15. November nach Berlin, Dortmund, Leipzig, Hamburg und München. Dort produzieren wir Live-Podcasts mit Brand 1, Antritt, Monopol, PIKT und Mission Energiewende. Das große Finale gibt's dann am 16. November im Leipziger Täubchental. Wir sprechen mit Matze Hielscher von Hotel Matze und Podcast-Expertinnen und Experten über Podcasts. Abends wird es dann laut mit den Shoutout-Louds. Edna. Und Lars Eidinger als DJ. Unterstützt vom Seaside Park Hotel. Wir freuen uns auf eine spannende Woche. Kommt vorbei, wenn ihr in der Nähe seid oder wenn wir in eurer Nähe sind. Tickets und mehr Infos gibt's auf detektor.fm.